unbeaten Bournemouth rocked up to the Select Car Leasing Stadium on a Saturday night televised championship clash to face a Reading side hoping to spur some under-the-lights magic, only to lose 2-0 to the Cherries and drop to 16th in the table. Welcome to the Silas End Podcast, episode 277. I'm your host, Mark Mayo. Joining me to talk about that defeat to Bournemouth on Saturday night is Alan West. Westy, how's it going, mate?
Yeah, good, thank you. You?
Yeah, I'm all right, actually. Where I am in the world's a pretty sunny Monday. I've just been reading that Reading aren't on telly over Christmas period, so that's a bit of a shame. But otherwise, it's not as bad as it could be.
No, it's good. Like I say, we're going to talk about the Bournemouth game, obviously. It's difficult to be too disappointed, but in other ways, I quite was, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. It's finding that kind of balance, isn't it, between reacting and actually still being, I suppose, kind of level-headed at the same time, which I guess is what this podcast has always strived to do. Before we get into the recap, then, as always, a big thanks to our sponsors, ZCZ Films, and our Patreon subscribers. And, well, let's get into it then. The recap of Reading 0, Bournemouth 2.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So we've now had three straight defeats, Westy. This is a game which we always knew going into was going to be maybe even the toughest game of the season. When we go to Bournemouth later in the season, they're probably not going to be unbeaten anymore, and they probably will have conceded a few more goals. So it's a weird one, isn't it? For me, this is a game of fine margins in front of goal. A couple of times the ball drops for George Puskas, doesn't convert it. One in particular, John Swift set up with a beautiful kind of pressing game, won the ball back, Rabonas it into the middle. There's another chance before that when Josh Laurent doesn't play him in. Probably would have been the easiest chance of the game had he played him in, but instead he kind of toe pokes it over the bar. Then down the other end, a bit of zonal marking gets exposed for Bournemouth's first goal, second goal kills it. And I guess that's kind of the game, really. It's just what you do in front of goal.
Yeah, well, we've said, how many times have we said on this show that it's championship football is really fine margins, isn't it? If you take your chances, you know, if you take the lead early, 9 times out of 10, you probably win the game or at least get something out of it. I think Bournemouth have lost once when they've gone in front over the last sort of 20, 30 games. So it just shows that if they get in the lead, you're going to struggle to peg them back. But it's the manner in which we're giving goals away. I thought we played well in the first half. I thought we were well in it. Like I said, poor decision making from Laurent. I'm glad you touched on it because I was going to bring it up. I mean, you can slate Puskas all you like, and I've been one of the first ones to have a pop at him. I know a lot of people go over the top a little bit. We mentioned it against Blackpool. How many times did he make these runs in beyond and not get given the ball? I counted at least 4 or 5 occasions in that game. And the one he did finally get played through, obviously the keeper's made it safe. In this game, he's coming for a lot of criticism. Again, I've said from the very beginning, I don't know what people see in Puskas when they sit there saying, we're not playing to his strengths, we're not doing this, we're not doing that. Now, he's had a run of games now. The amount of times people said, oh, he's not had a run of games, he's had a run of games, he's had opportunities, and he's failing to convert them. Probably, if he scores that goal early doors, we might go on to at least get some out of the match, because the goals he gave away were poor, weren't they, Mark? Both of them were just... You can blame the manager for lots of things. But you can't blame him for the second goal when you've got players of good experience giving the ball away in stupid areas, cost us, obviously. How can you have a player like Cahill, who's been probably the best header in the Premier League for the last 10 to 15 years, unmarked for a corner? Because if you watch what they've done, as soon as we had a corner or any sort of opportunity to have a head at goal, Cahill was marking Dan, because they'd obviously earmarked Dan as one of our best headers of ball. They know what he's all about. You know he scored a lot of goals in the Premier League from headers. He nearly scored one on Saturday night, but Kaya was marking him. But how can we leave a player of that calibre unmarked in the box without you saying to the manager, come on, you really need now to have a look at this zonal marking, because it's coming a bit of a joke. And teams are clearly targeting it, and that's what's happened, and it's basically cost us the game. Puskas, again, I've never been his biggest fan. I don't see what he offers. But when you get opportunities like that from Swift, who's done a Rabona to put it right in your path, you've got to at least hit the target. If the keeper saves it, keeper saves it. But to miss the target, a player that cost you £8 million should be doing better. But the options are limited, and that's probably one of our biggest problems.
Yeah, to go back to that that first goal for Bournemouth, I know we've got a question on zonal marking in the mailbag, but I suppose it's one of those arguments that you can have. I think people have these arguments about like communism or Christianity or something, where they say it's not the idea, it's the implementation that's the problem, which you can probably say about zonal marking. But when Bournemouth put a ball to the back post, Cahill, as you say, completely runs round unmarked. No Reading player reacts. And is that actually... does Paunovic tell them to react? Are they meant to react? Because the thing is with zonal marking, if they put the ball on the penalty spot, that's the zone we're marking. It's all easy. Or in the near post. But as soon as they lob it back to the far post, which is unusual, and therefore the zonal marking isn't ready for it, you've got to... you know, these players have to think on their toes a little bit more. And the ball comes into the far post, and Solanke, who, if you watch that, the entire corner, he's also completely unmarked the entire time. And it's a, you know, it's 1-0, and I guess in a large way that's almost 80%, 90% chance of Reading winning the game gone. And so I think
it's crazy. It's craziness. Because there's no accountability to it. We've said it loads of times. There's no accountability to zonal marking. You're just marking an area, which is great, like you said, if they're going to put it on a penalty spot. But teams are soon figured out, and good managers will think, right, where's our opportunity to win this game? They've conceded a lot of goals from free kicks and corners. We all know that. We sat there and watched it ourselves. So what can we do to get around this zonal marking farce? And they've thought, right, the best header, we'll put him at the back post. No one's going to mark him. We know that. And there's no accountability to mark him, is there? Whereas Cahill marked down every single corner, every single free kick. Now, you know for yourself, just as a bystander, just as a person sat in the crowd, you can probably look at teams like Bournemouth and Fulham and so many other sides and think, right, who scores a lot of goals from headers? Who's good in the air, right? So automatically you think, right, we'll put our two best players on their best two headers of the ball. It's just simple. It's simple, isn't it? The more simpler you make it, the easier it is, if it clearly makes sense. So why have you got Cahill and Solanke unmarked in the box when they're their main goal threats from corners? It baffles me. It absolutely baffles me. I think it's lazy coaching. I really genuinely think it's lazy coaching. Surely you do your own work and say, these are the players that are good in the air. Let's make sure we mark them. Even if you're just marking them two. Do you know what I mean? If you're just stopping them two winning the headers and then carrying on your zonal marking, at least that would make sense. But to do what they're doing at the moment is just, I think it's lazy coaching. That's lazy coaching for me.
Yeah, it is. It's like a hybrid. Surely it does make more sense. I mean, I can't think of the smallest player on Bournemouth's team, but obviously they had Ryan Fraser all those years. If he's alone in the box and you don't mark him, you can kind of understand that. But yeah, you've just got to do the basics, and I think that's what Reading kind of didn't do. As for the second goal, I mean, I've never been a fan of Liam Moore just perennially dropping off and letting his man kind of pick his spot. It's a good finish, but I suppose by then, and as you say, Dan had a good header at the end saved. By then, Reading, it's a team that just can't build that late momentum. It feels like this has been the case almost. It feels like this has been the case for years. If Reading score and we're winning by half time, we'll win the game. But if we're not, then there's just no chance. It does feel like games are decided very early on with this team. And that is perhaps the sense of the lack of options off the bench and the squad players, or just, I don't know, maybe it is a tactical thing as well, that Paunovic, he's struggled all the way through. Perhaps this is the hardest game to ask him to do it, but to gain momentum or build momentum late in the game, and it just doesn't seem to happen.
No, but again, in his defence, and I don't want to make it all negative, in his defence, we were good in the first half, but this happened against Blackpool, didn't it? We was absolutely, well, I wouldn't say we're great against Blackpool, but we'd done enough to go in the lead. But it seems because there's such a lack of options on the bench, I mean, it was a substitute score for Bournemouth, and they had probably, what, £25 million worth of talent on their bench? And we had a load of kids that were going to school the next day. Do you know what I mean? It's hard for him to make these changes. It was like, oh, maybe you should took Puskas off or give someone else a chance up front. But I've seen Clark play on a number of occasions now, and I see him play on that Tuesday night game when I played Swansea in the League Cup, and he didn't do anything to impress me, and I don't see him every week. The only person who genuinely impressed me on that Tuesday night against Swansea at the start of the season was Southwood, and now he's a first-team player. I think sometimes you have to trust the manager and think, well, he sees these players every day, and I've seen them a couple of times now, and I've not been impressed with them. I don't think they're ready to be Championship footballers, and he clearly thinks they're not ready to be Championship footballers. And if you look at our injury list, which come up on the telly, and you see the players that we're missing, you think if you had them nine back in that squad, then he would be able to freshen things up, and we'd definitely run out of steam in second halves. I mean, we can see that from the way we're conceding goals in the second half. We're definitely running out of steam. And there's a few players over the last couple of weeks that needed to come off after an hour, and he just couldn't do it. And he ends up taking off Puskas. And then people are saying, well, maybe you should not start him. But I don't think it would change our fortunes, him not starting. I really genuinely don't. Will he get a goal at some point? Let's hope so, because let's face it, if you've got a striker up front that's not putting a ball in there, you're always going to struggle to win games.
Yeah, no, that is the kind of crux of it as well. It's a final point I'll make as well is that, as you say, Bournemouth, all the talent they had on the bench and everything, and yes, Wren Reading are fully fit. It's a different prospect, but perhaps the kind of mitigating factor for me is that, I mean, I'm not one who's expecting us to get promoted, certainly not automatically this season. Bournemouth obviously are, and you've got three teams at the top of the Championship who everyone said were going to be at the top of the Championship by this stage. Fulham and West Brom up there as well. These teams just have so much, it sounds basic, but they have so much more money to work with than Reading. They've got so much more, you know, long-term confidence in their finances. Whether Reading have bodged theirs or not, even if you're a team, you know, just pluck a team randomly like Preston or Bristol City who doesn't bodge their finances like Reading do, you still don't have the money that a team like West Brom, Bournemouth do have. And therefore, it does just kind of, it does mitigate the sense of disappointment out of the defeat, because they had Gary Cahill at the back and we had Scott Dan. One of those ex-Premier League players was a kind of good, stable force. The other one won multiple Premier League titles. So it does just kind of underline how difficult it's going to be.
Yeah, it is. And like I said, if Bournemouth get three or four injuries, they can replace them with players of a calibre that are good Championship players. Whereas at the moment, we're struggling to do that, aren't we? And if it wouldn't have been for the players that we got in sort of late, we would have had a dreadful squad of players, basically, wouldn't we, that going past the first 11 or 12, there's no one else you'd want to put on the pitch. Big squads get you a long way in a Championship, as we well know, because it's so intense. And like I said, we've got three games this week and you've got to play with them same 11 again. And they're definitely running out of steam, some of them, and you can see that. And the manager's not willing to put anyone off the bench on the pitch because he clearly don't think they're good enough. And I'll be honest with you, I agree with him.
Yeah, well, final point then for the recap is that Reading hadn't actually won consecutive home games versus Bournemouth since November 1993. And I checked the last time that Reading did manage to string two home wins against Bournemouth together was about a fortnight after I was born. So it was a long time ago that Reading actually have got two over in a row against Bournemouth. So let's hear from Velko Paunovic now, and then we'll go into the mailbag.
In terms of what we saw on the field, there were moments that they were playing very good. I think we confronted also very well, especially in the first half. I think our pressing was very good. I think they did moments keep the ball, but we controlled them. And then when we got the moments when we controlled the ball and our attacks were very dangerous, as I said, a few of them, for me, big chances missed. And again, big chance to take a lead against a team that is in a fantastic form.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
So Waldemar Janizak starts us off then, and as this, we've kind of covered a few of these topics, so we'll kind of be brief if we need to be, but Waldemar Janizak saying, how did Puskas not score from the magic Swifty Rabona? Peter Martyr saying, can we afford to stick with a striker who's now not scored in 17 games and on last night's performance is not going to anytime soon? Sure, we have to give one of the youngsters a chance, and at least until Junior is back. Well, Westy, as you said, you're not rating any of the youngsters for now. I think that it is absolutely right. Can we afford to stick the striker who's not scored in 17 games? No, we can't. But what it is very difficult to say what other option we have. The short time I've seen of someone like Jamari Clark, his touch, his control wasn't great. He's obviously a brilliant athlete. He's done okay for the under-23s, but ultimately, is he going to suit... You know, we say Puskas, there isn't really a game plan with him. What would the game plan be with Clark, for example? Junior Hoylett, if he's back, yeah, definitely I'd start him instead. And then afterwards, you're kind of thinking about doing a, you know, maybe putting someone like even John Swift up front just to shake things up. But I think ultimately this is the situation now, and Puskas, maybe it is about Paunovic getting the best out of Puskas. Maybe it is about just finding a way of doing something a bit different. I don't think it's going to work and produce five goals in five games, but this is the hand that Reading have kind of dealt themselves. They signed Puskas, now they've got to work with him. And it's not, I don't think it's going to work, but can we afford to stick with him? I don't think there's particularly another option. Daniel Roberts saying, how worried should we be about losing John Swift in January? Mays also tweeting us saying, what are the chances of using key players in the transfer window, of losing key players in the transfer window? And what should we look to do in terms of signing cover or replacements? Westy Pavanovic said after the game, or actually before the game, he said in terms of contract players, because we've got all these players out of contract at the end of the season, he said it's a complicated situation. We're allowed to negotiate, but it's not easy. There are conversations, but nothing is close to closing a deal. In terms of January, this Reading team, I mean, I've said before, maybe if we are not, if the ownership don't want to go for promotion this year and do want to cash in, so, like providing that we don't obviously get relegated, I'd maybe understand cashing in on a few players. The kind of way the team is now, 16th with a potential points deduction coming in, if we start cashing in, then that might start being relegation.
Yeah, like I said last time I was on the show, this is a big year for Reading, one way or another. I think someone said about Swift, you mentioned it, I'd looked at the Twitters before I come on the show, and there's 100% Swift will be leaving the end of the season. I said it last time I was on, there's no doubt he's going to definitely leave. I can't see any way, shape or form, unless there's a miracle happens, it would be here next year. Will they cash in on at Christmas time? Maybe. I don't know. It depends if someone's going to say, do you know what, we'll give you $2 million now so we can have him now. And the only teams that are going to do that are be sort of teams down the bottom of the Premier League, I'd have thought, or at the top of the Championship. It's a good buy for them, isn't it? £2 million is not a risk if it saves you. Whether he's good enough to step up to the Premier League, time will tell. He's still improving and he's certainly having his best season. So he'll be gone. I think it's a difficult balancing act for Reading. I think it's more sort of driven by the finances than it will be anything else. Will they take a relegation Reading and try and rebuild? Who knows? You don't know until we get there, do we? It's a difficult question to answer. But there's no doubt in my mind that Swift won't be here next year. No way.
Well, if League One had different financial rules, then we could drop down a division, bulk up the squad and come back. You maybe think of taking it. But I don't think the financial rules won't be any kinder. So that's kind of why I think that the idea of the rebuild is kind of difficult. We've just... At the end of the day, a lot of kind of League One, obviously you go down to kind of conference division teams. These teams kind of lose half their teams anyway at the end of the year. Maybe Reading are just going to have to, you know, kind of duck and dive a little bit and work something out. But I think Swift is probably the only one we might lose in January because he's the only one that any team is going to come in and say, yes, he is at a contract at the end of the season, but here is a few million quid because we are desperate. And you look at, you know, let's just say like Norwich or even a Fulham or something like that. They're the only teams, I agree, they're the only teams that bother doing that. They're not going to do it for Raphael or Josh Laurent at the moment because they're not playing well enough.
There's no need. They can wait till the end of the season and sign them then. Do you know what I mean? They're not, even if you sign Josh Laurent or Raphael, they're not going to save you from anything, are they? Whereas Swift's is more of a flair player that might give you that little bit of spark you need to get a few goals to get you out of trouble. So you're right in saying that. I don't think we lose anyone other than John Swift, maybe, around the transfer window.
Yeah, and I think John Swift is good enough. If I was a Premier League team, I would absolutely do it. But, you know, there we go. Whether they do or not.
£2 million, it's no risk signing, is it?
No, absolutely. Loy Royal saying, are there any good youngsters who we could feel confidently or even on a whim? If not, what is the point? Would we be better off starting some and having experience on the bench? They do say they know it sounds crazy. Alternatively, could we get some cardboard cutouts? Pavanovic did actually talk about the issue of the young players not getting too much of a chance. He said that you can't give somebody something that he didn't earn or when he's not ready. Now, you've touched on it earlier, Westy. We don't know what happens on the training pitch. We don't know whether these players are ready or not. I still think that ultimately... Maybe Pavanovic fears. I mean, let's talk the Bournemouth game, for example, because it's obviously a bit of a unique one playing a team that is so good. Maybe he fears if you put someone like, you know, Clark on with half an hour to go. Maybe he does fear that A, kills your chances of winning the game completely because he's not as good as Puskás, or B, that therefore Bournemouth go and win 5-0 instead of 2-0, and it really is a problem. Like, maybe that's kind of what he's thinking. Because, I mean, I agree with the sentiment. When you're 2-0 down with 20 minutes to go, you should throw them on at 20 minutes to go rather than 5 minutes to go, because I don't think you'll get much out of 5 minutes. But maybe there is that kind of fear in Pavanovic that it just won't improve our circumstances. And ultimately, I mean, we don't know this, but does a player get much out of 20 minutes compared to 10? Like, does it really earn them much in terms of experience?
No, probably not. And like I say, you don't want to go and smash their confidence by sort of coming on last half hour and then score three or four goals. I get exactly where it's coming from. I mean, like I said, I agree with Paunovic in this case that the players that sat on that bench aren't good enough to be in that side. It's as simple as that. You can stick someone up front and let them run around for half hour, great. But Jamari Clark, he's not a good footballer. I've seen him three or four times now. He is not a good footballer. He might be able to do it in a boys under-23s, but when you go to a championship, that is a whole different level. I mean, I'd be surprised if he went to League One and managed to score a lot of goals. And that's the level you're looking at. Because that under-23 league is poor comparison to championship. It's probably poor comparison to League One. So you're saying what you're doing is you're putting on a League Two, League One striker and expecting him to score goals in the championship or make a contribution that means your team's better. Whether that's scoring goals, holding the ball, whatever happens to be. Do you know what I mean? I just don't think that anyone sat on that bench is good enough. And Paunovic clearly, by what he said, he don't think they're good enough either. So why is he putting them on the pitch if he don't think they're good enough or they haven't earned their chance? I agree with him. Totally agree with him. I think that 11, you have to play every week because that's the 11 we got. If you get four or five back, obviously some of them would drop out. But at the minute, that's the best you've got to run with. And if you're playing the league leaders, you ain't putting out a couple of kids and hoping they can do it when you know full well they can't.
Well, ironically as well, where the kids I kind of got a sense, I mean, I don't go to the under-23 games, so I can't say that these are the best players, but the kids that, like, you know, Mamadi Camara, I suppose to an extent, someone like Clark or whatever, but these are attacking players, like wing players basically. Like Camara as a wing player, maybe the best kid on the bench, but the wings aren't the problem. Is it replacing a Jari or Swift or Dele Bashiru isn't going to change the game, Fred, because then you're taking off actually one of the best players. What we need is a goal-scoring striker, which ultimately we don't have unless we're wrong about Jamai Clark, or centre midfielder. And you look at the bench that we did have, apart from some sort of attacking centre midfielders, and maybe Ashcroft, I think he's a centre-back, but maybe he could play centre mid if you really wanted him to, but there aren't any kids centre midfielders to put in. So that's another problem that we've got.
Yeah, unless you're going to change the system. You know what I mean? Unless you're going to change the system, which, again, is another option. But, yeah, I totally agree with what Paunovic is saying. I know he's got a lot of stick for it, but I'm backing him on this one because even Camara, I've seen him play three times now. A lot of times, he just looks like Ellie's chicken. You know, he's got a bit of pace, but he had one opportunity in that Tuesday night against Swansea from right outside the goal, blazed it over from about 3 yards out. And that was which really is a pre-season friendly then, first League Cup games. And he's done nothing to impress me, and I just don't think any of them are any good on the bench. I think it's probably the worst set of youngsters we've had for a long, long time.
Well, we did actually, as a kind of mid-pandemic thing, we did actually release a hell of a lot of under-23s and really kind of had to focus down what sort of young players we had, which might be the sort of thing that's coming to get us. And we'll talk in News Bites in just a minute about how the academy teams are getting on at the moment. Last few ones then. Paul Townsend: if a tree falls in the woods and no one is around to hear it, does zonal marking work? Paunovic actually said he was pissed off, quote unquote, after the game about the conceding from set piece. He said, last year we conceded zero goals from set pieces, but there are many things that get involved. Well, yeah, I mean, we've kind of gone over this, but I would just have to say that ultimately, saying that last year we were good and now we're not is not really an excuse for a manager in any kind of circumstance. So hopefully that's the sort of thing that Paunovic, whether he's being kind of stubborn and sticking with it relentlessly, or whether he's going to change it and sort things out, or whether there is a kind of way of making it work, we shall see. Amelia Jade said, once our injured players start coming back, do you think our season will change drastically, or are we going to be stuck in the same situation? I think in reality, the players that we've been missing, Westy, players like Meite, Zhao, if they come into this team, it is a good championship team. I mean, we're 16th earlier in the season. It's not like we're kind of 5 points off the drop zone or anything like that. We're not kind of rooted at the bottom of the table or flying. We're just in amongst it at the moment. One win sends you up four places. One defeat sends you down four places. So those players are really good players. And I think they will reverse the fortunes of this team quite substantially. Not playoff contenders unless they come back tomorrow. But I think we'll find out just how good they are when they do return.
Yeah, again, I've said this a million times on the show. Lucas Joao, if he doesn't play, Reading are half a side. And even if he's sulking, he's still a threat because he's got everything that you would want out of a championship striker. He's big, He's strong. He can hold a ball. He's skillful and he's quick and he's everything that Puskas isn't. So if he plays, you automatically can step forward a few yards. You know, you can play the ball up to him. He's going to win it. You know, he's got a pace over the top and it makes the world of difference having him in that side. And if he was in that team on against Bournemouth, or he's been in that team all through the season, we're in a much better position now because he's irreplaceable as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that not many Championship teams have a striker as good as Lucas Shaw, and if he's not in the team, then yeah, it's going to be very difficult to find an alternative. Laura Rule, then, final question of the week and a bit of a change of tone. If you do want to get your questions into the Tylerstend podcast, the Twitter, the Facebook, we always put a call out for questions, and there's also the tylerstend@gmail.com. Laura Rule saying, so the clocks have just gone back an hour this weekend. Reading are celebrating 150 years this season. If we could turn back the clock on Reading, how far back would you go and why? Perhaps someone could choose a point a season, another a decade ago, or someone forever. If there was a point of Reading's history you'd go back to, Westy, and kind of live on from that moment, where would you pick?
1995 or the 106 team. That 1995 team was great. It was really good to watch, great football. There was all drama, obviously McGee leaving, stuff like that. Around that time, that's definitely for me was probably the best because they didn't have a lot of money. Do you know what I mean? He'd got players in that you sort of unfancied, but were good. They had a good crop of youngsters come through in your Taylors and your Williamses and players like that. You know, Jukesy on the wing. That was the best time for me. And plus the 1016. I'd just love to go back to a time where I'd turn up at home match and think, well, we've won this. It's just a matter of time. Because it doesn't happen, or hasn't happened quite that much ever since.
No, I was thinking about this, and the time I go back to is kind of the morning after the defeat to Walsall in the playoff final, which I think was 2001. Because if you go from that moment onwards for a good like 6 or 7 years, you've got basically only good times, haven't you? You've got a complete ascension up until, I guess, the relegation from the Premier League, which is a really good time. And I mean, luckily, it's a time when both of us were involved in the club and watching it and everything. And it's just so rare that you get that continual uplift. Probably in 95 as well, you get the optimism and you get the kind of sense of something new that I suppose, as fans, if you're lucky, you kind of only ever get it once.
Do you know what? Funny enough, I was looking the other day at my first game. I went to see Reading. That's a bit nostalgic. But first game I said, I've mentioned it before. I went to watch Reading versus New Zealand, believe it or not. And that was in 94, I believe. It was 29th of October, 1984. And George Best played for Reading as a guest. And that was my first ever game. And that was sort of just gone past the anniversary of that. So if I want to get my life back, I suppose I could go back to 29th of October, 1984. Start all over again.
Yeah, well, I think mine was in the heady days of Kid for a Quid with a young Wimbledon winger whippersnapper called Joby McEnough scored a last-minute winner against us. And then I still went back. And then the next game we lost 1-0 to Sheffield United and I still went back. So it's just as well they had the England under-21 games at the Medeski at that time, because otherwise I probably wouldn't have seen a win for years.
No, but yeah, it's a good question, actually. It's a good one for the listeners to have a think about themselves.
Yeah, especially in this anniversary year, as we're kind of approaching it, I suppose the club are probably going to have to call it Christmas Day, I think, is the myth kind of sense that when Reading was founded. So probably get a bit more of that in the next few weeks, and hopefully Tyler can be involved in some stuff like that as well. So definitely any kind of those sort of nostalgia questions, 150 years, do fire them into the Tylerstend podcast. I'm very happy to take our mind off of the defeat at the moment.
Before we move on, Mark, what was the worst time? What wouldn't you want to go back to? That's another good question.
I suppose I'd probably say those years. I mean, I don't have a full knowledge of this sort of stuff, but the years, there's long times, kind of around like maybe the 70s, for example, where Reading just kind of stuck. Just being a continual, you know, Division 3 sort of team, Elm Park, 2,000 fans. Yeah, you kind of get, I guess that's kind of the Robin Friday era and all that sort of stuff to kind of perk you up. But really, you kind of flick through the Reading seasons just from, just to look through it now, from 52 all the way to 71, Reading were just in Division 3 and continually finished between kind of 5th and 20th. Every year for that entire period. I never got a cup run or anything. So I'd say that probably period is when Reading just couldn't get out.
yeah, it was kind of doldrums when at that sort of time. I mean, we've been lucky, really. I mean, I'm 43 this birthday, but we've been lucky to see probably some of the best Reading sides in history. Although it don't seem like it always, we have.
That's yeah.
Just that and that.
No, I've always said, because I know this is one of the things that people kind of mock Reading for, and it's also something that, I mean, when you say you're a Reading fan, people kind of bring up, say, oh, why, what a boring club, no one cares about Reading, just an irrelevance, all this sort of stuff. And I kind of said, well, actually, put kind of the last 3-4 years aside, Reading as a club have had so much kind of cup runs, promotions, relegations, playoff battles. We've had basically, like, up until, I would say, probably Yap Stam's playoff final, if you count back from that, there's probably 80% of seasons we were fighting for something, or at least having a bit of fun here and there. Like, that's always been the glory of it.
I think the moments in time I'd hate to go back to, and I still can't bring myself to watch it, was that second half against Bolton in 1995 again. That broke my heart, and it's never repaired since, I'll be honest with you. It doesn't hurt me like that hurt me.
No, I still remember hearing that Fulham had scored when we were falling up against Derby, and just having that kind of that is the kind of fragility kind of gets broken then, particularly as a younger fan, when everything's kind of rosy and you think that, oh no, we'll get out of it, it'll be fine, and then you think, wow, we haven't, like, it's actually gone wrong.
It's not Roy the Rovers after all, it is real, and you do get relegated. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. If anyone wants to share those moments, do definitely get in touch. Let's go into news rights then and look towards the future and see what's going on in the academy side for Reading FC.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Well, with the international break for the women's game at the moment, and there was the FA Cup semi-finals for last season, got delayed there with this weekend, so Reading women's team aren't in action there until November 7th, their way to Birmingham, so that's obviously weekend coming up at Birmingham. The under-23s lost to Southampton on Monday. They host Sunderland tonight after we record this. They're actually next to bottom in the Premier League to Division 2. At the moment, so not great for them. And also next to bottom is the under-18s, beaten 3-0 by Chelsea on the weekend. They've got Arsenal next up, and I mean, I'm loath to kind of draw comparisons from how the first team is doing to the academy is doing, but maybe it is a bit of a signifier as to how the club is doing that these academy teams aren't doing so well, because Westy, you kind of look back over the years and think about the academy teams that did do well. I remember they won the Premier League kind of reserves trophy under Brian McDermott back in kind of 07, 08 kind of time. And that team, Alex Pearce, Jen Carachan, et cetera, were really good. And these teams aren't doing so good. So maybe it is a sign that actually the production line is kind of stuttering now.
Yeah, it's a definite sign. And so we've lost a lot of talent recently, haven't we, that have sort of not got to the first team, but have played a couple of games, and players that sat on the bench that have gone to other clubs. Bigger clubs have picked them up. Again, I said it earlier in the show, I really think that our crop of youngsters at the minute is poor in comparison to what we have had. I mean, you're lucky in general if you get two out of the sort of under-23s that make it to be first team players and play 30, 40 games for you. And I just don't see that happening at the moment. There's no one there that stands out. And even in the under-23s, there's no one that's really shining. I know Clark scored naturally the other day, but like I said, the level of under-23 football is nothing in comparison to Championship football. Not even close.
Yeah, I suppose Femi Aziz is kind of the one this season that has kind of taken a hold. Yeah. Maybe someone like Jerry O'Dorset, who's on loan at Rochdale, playing quite regularly there. I did see, I mean, this is kind of the thing, isn't it, is that Danny Loader should be part of this crop. He scored his first goal for Porto on the weekend, albeit a last-minute goal in the 4-1 win at home. Michael Olise would be part of it as well. Omar Richards, a bit older, but should be part of it. I don't know if you saw the highlights from Crystal Palace recently, but Michael Olise coming off the bench. You know, we can go into, probably do a whole podcast on the whole situation of him leaving Reading, but he's looked good when he's come off the bench for Palace this year. And obviously being off the bench is a bit different to doing it week in, week out from the start, but he's looked very good, I've found.
Yeah, but we knew that, didn't we? We knew that he was going to, well, give it another 4 or 5 years and he'd be a guaranteed Premier League footballer and probably playing for one of the bigger clubs because he is that good. And to lose him for £8 million is a crime, really. And Richards as well. Again, like I was touching upon, we don't seem to be able to keep our young players at the moment for one reason or another, whether it by financial or they're just going to other clubs. We've lost two of the best talents in England to sides that are bigger than us, and that's just the way football goes. But other than that, I just don't see anyone. Well, you rarely see anyone of their ilks anyway. So to have two, we were lucky. But Richard's probably developed a little bit later. He was sort of off the radar, wasn't he? Then he had one great season, and now he's rightfully got a big move. And Elise is sort of, again, he's just a maverick sort of talent who's made to be a Premier League footballer, and I'm sure he will be for the next 10, 12 years. But other than that, like I said, the results are bad in the academies, and I just don't see where the production line's going. All of a sudden, it seems to have stalled, shall we say, for the time being, hopefully.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things as well about the whole financial fair play and everything like that. And I do think about this as well about the contracts, is that if it is stopping Reading from investing in their academy, if it stops Reading from actually being able to negotiate contracts with players they currently have, then I think you have to question what the point of kind of financial fair play is, because those things, effectively, if you just make sure that a club can't have any players left, then what is the point of them being a football club? So that's a question. That's a big debate for another day. But I do kind of feel like that's a little bit of overkill when it comes to the financial stuff. And maybe that's the reason that Reading are struggling with the academy at the moment. But the first team's back in action on Tuesday night. Let's talk about the trip to Millwall.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals. So be loud and be proud for the big match preview.
Right then, 7:45 PM kickoff, Tuesday, November 2nd, we go to the Den, where we've not won since February 2014, losing 5 of the last 8 in total against Millwall in the league. We've also lost 6 of our last 8 away games, while Millwall have won 4 of their last 6. They did lose on the weekend, however. We reeled out quite a few stats for the game against Blackpool the other day, Westy, and all of those stats managed to get proven completely wrong. So maybe it's Reading's turn to beat the form book. Don't expect many goals. Millwall will average a goal a game this season. Reading have 5 in 7. This is going to be your absolute classic Championship Tuesday night scrap, isn't it?
Well, yeah, you'd have thought so, but as a way of proving us wrong, doesn't it end up being 3-0 or something? Yeah, historically, over the last 6 or 7 years, we struggled to get, when we go to Millwall. Cliche is a tough place to go, but every place in the Championship is a tough place to go. But as I've said, Reading's 11 is as good as any, and I think they just need something to fall from, just a bit of luck, maybe. And they're more than capable of getting a result if they bring their A game, I think.
Yeah, quick word on Birmingham away on Saturday, because a few people might be listening to this after the Millwall game. Again, I thought we had a good record at Birmingham, but actually, 3 defeats in 4 against them, 1 league win against them since August 2017. I mean, ultimately, Reading, these teams, I think they're 12th and 14th in the league at the moment, and Reading are 16th. These two games taken together, you've got to be looking at winning one of them, maybe taking a couple draws or win and draws. I mean, you've got to just pick up points somewhere. And these two teams, these prime chances. If Reading perhaps play as they did against Bournemouth, then there should be at least a couple points out of these games.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, if they play to anywhere near their full potential, Reading, they should be getting something out of these matches. Like I said, whether that be a win or a draw. If you've got a win and a draw, I think we'll all be happy with that, 4 points from the 6 and 2 away games. Like I said, if you can't get something against these two sides, then you do start looking over your shoulder a bit, don't you?
Yeah, prediction time then. Ollie and Adam both picked up 2-0 defeats against Bournemouth. Myself, Westy and Handbags all got the defeat. So Westy, you're top at the moment, 14 points. Ollie's on 13, Adam 9, Ben and Handbags on 7, myself and Sim trailing on 6. So as the outright leader at the moment, I'll let you have the first crack at Millwall.
I'm going to go 1-0 Millwall, much as it pains me.
I think I'm going to go 1-1. I think there is a bit of a bounce in there somewhere, and Millwall, not a great team, are they, at the end of the day? Probably not pushing for promotion this year, but we shall see. And do keep on top of the Tarlest Den, the blog, the social media, and of course the podcast for all things after that game. We'll be back next week after that Birmingham game. And Westy, as ever, a big pleasure to have you on this week. And hopefully your prediction won't keep you top of the league by Tuesday night.
As you dished out them stats about no goals and all that, and I thought to myself, I think you've influenced me there, subliminally influenced me, giving it a 1-0. So hopefully I'm wrong. I don't want to be wrong, believe me.
Absolutely. We always want to be wrong about it, and we kind of predict these players aren't going to do very well, and half the time we are wrong. So anyone who's upset by it probably doesn't need to take us too seriously, because there's certainly...
Yeah, it's just a pin.
Certainly not always the case. Well, with that in mind then, as always, thank you very much, guys, for listening and tuning in. As I say, we'll be back after the Birmingham game. Two away games this week in the Championship for Reading to prove that there is still life in this old 11 just yet. Whether Pavlovic turns to the kids or can sort out his set pieces remains to be seen. But hopefully, along the way, there'll be a couple of wins for the Royals. Thank you for listening. Come on, you Arse.
You smile, funny how the crumbs always